So without any further delay, I'll begin by introducing our first speaker, and that speaker is Dan Boussier. Dan is a swine nutritionist who, with his partner, founded Group Series in 2004. The company specializes in all areas of swine nutrition. Group Series services include consulting in swine production, production and distribution of breeding stock, and sales of nutritional products. Dan works on the development and monitoring of nutrition programs for swine producers all over Canada. Dan's topic today is on sow nutrition and feeding. So without further ado, Dan, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Mark, for the introduction. So I'll go and share my screen. So everything is good?
Loud and clear, Dan.
Perfect. Good. So thanks a lot, everybody, for being there. Thanks, Mark, Kim, for the invitation to speak at the conference this year. So without any further delay, I'm going to start and jump into my subject today, which is sow nutrition, feeding, and new development to ensure key success with farm production. Something that we know for sure is that the fact about production. So today we have increasing productivity in farm. If you go back 10, 15 years ago, it was a highlight to be at 25 PSY. Today we have more and more farm reaching the 30, 35. But that has brought some challenge. So with the increase in productivity, we have lower birth and more challenge with weeding pre-weaning mortality. So the work that has to be done on farm to save the pigs from large litter has to be more important than what used to be 10, 15 years ago. Also, we have issue with labor. Without any surprise, we understand that getting people to work in pig farm is hard. Getting the right people with expertise is hard. And when you have to manage those sow that are a bit harder to manage, less resilience to stress, to disease, it brings some challenge as well. It's not rare today to see mortality in sow barn that's going to reach 12, 15%. I was looking at some report from Pig Champ yesterday in the U.S. with average herd mortality at 12% for sow herd, which is not good. That brings higher culling and replacement rate as well. So more gill to enter the barn, more sow to cull, more challenge with activation of those gills. So all those things have an impact on your performance. But still, like I said, a lot of farms are producing 30 pigs per sow per year. But is that the right number to look at? I want to talk a bit about lifetime productivity. That's something I think we should look at it a bit more, because I think production over a year production system on PSY is okay. It's good to have those numbers, but the most important thing is how much pigs that sow over a lifetime will be able to produce. I just made a fake example here showing three farms with different litter size. So 14
and a half for the
farm number three and 15
and a half for the first farm. So you will think that farm one is a better farm in terms of productivity. But if you look at her lifetime productivity in terms of litter per sow lifetime, if she's at 4.5 versus farm two at five, that farm one with higher litter size will produce 2.75 pigs less over the entire productivity of herds of the sow in that farm. So yes, number matter on litter size, but what matters the most is how much sow will stay long in the herd, how many litter they will be able to produce over their lifetime.
So, sow feeding, what do we agree on? And when I say what do we agree on, is not only me, but I think general industry, nutritionists, pig specialists, what do we agree on? So in gestation, we don't want to get the sow too fat, okay? It's important because fat sow, they eat less. I'm going to talk about that a bit later, but that's a fact that everybody agree with. We want to have sow at farrowing that are not too fat, so 16 to 18 meters of back fat. Some people may have different number. That's the number I've been using, and I think it's pretty what other people are doing as well. In early gestation, that's where you need to feed the sow to redo her body condition. So if a sow lost too much body condition during lactation, you want to use the first 35 to 42 days to get that sow back in good shape. Then in mid-gestation, you want to go back to an average plain level of feed to maintain that body condition. Lactation feeding, nothing very new. You want to have optimal feed intake. You want to support milk production, and you want to minimize body condition loss during the lactation period. What we are not sure about. So what things that myself and other people that I've talked to may not have all the answer today. In gestation, do we have different requirements for amino acid energy during the it's lactation that I wrote there, but this is during gestation. Should we have precision feeding? Does it pay off? You know, should we feed our cell with different level of amino acid using different feed system in gestation? And is there a payback on that? And one of the big questions that we have asked ourselves over the last couple of years is bump feeding at the end of gestation needed? And if so, how much and how long you have to do it? Then pre-fallopian. So what happened when the cell is close to farrow? Does the requirement of that cell change versus gestation and lactation? We don't have a lot of data on that. Can we impact performance of the cell by manipulating the cell diet, nutrient requirement, or what we do in that pre-farrow period? Should we use the gestation diet, the lactation diet, or should we use a different diet? In lactation, do we need to feed a high lysine diet, high protein diet? The thought has been that the cell, they need high protein, high lysine to support milk production and maintain body condition. But is it really needed? I'll show you some stuff on that. Do we need a lot of energy in that diet? What is the impact of protein on feed intake? When we overfeed in lysine, we feed more protein. What is the impact on feed intake in the lactation? And again, when we talk about feeding animal based on their requirement, should we look at precision feeding or blend feeding? Then the last point, importance of fiber. Should we care about fiber? Do we need to look at fiber a bit more closely? And not all fiber are the same. So that's something we're going to touch in my presentation. So gestation feeding, pretty straightforward. You know, normally most of the farm will have one single diet in gestation, 0.55, 0.54, 0.56 SID lysine, low energy, high fiber content if you have fiber access to your farm or with the mill or the feed mill that supply feed to you. Pretty straightforward. Again, early gestation, you use that period of 35, first 42 days to redo body condition of the sow by feeding them a bit more feed if they were too thin or if they lost too much body condition during lactation. In mid-gestation, you maintain the feed level. The feed usage should be around 800, 850 kg per sow per year. Again, some people want to target less than that, but be careful with the energy level of your diet. If you feed a low energy diet in gestation, you have to adjust the feed intake or feed level based on energy intake per day. And again, the objective at farrowing 16, 18 in terms of back fat. Bump feeding, I raised a question a bit earlier. Do we need to do that? You know, there's a lot of debate about that over the last couple of years. What we know or what I think we should not do is go back to the old days of feeding more feed the last 4 weeks of gestation to increase birth weight. We were doing that then, more than that, 15, 20 years ago, without any proof that we were able to improve birth weight and with probably some negative impact to overfeed those cells for too long before they farrow. So that one, for me, it's pretty clear. You should not do that. What about the bump feeding the last 2 weeks pre-farrow? Shorter period of time and lower amount of added feed. Some say yes, some say no. I'm still on the yes side, although I'm not going to bet my house on it. But I think we have to consider that the sow at the end of gestation with larger size may start to lose body condition. So to have a bit more feed, which will increase the lysine intake, energy intake of that sow, may not be a bad thing. We're talking about 1 to 1.5 pounds per day increase for the last 15 days before farrowing. So not a huge amount of added feed and not for a long period of time. The cost is about $225 to $250 per sow, versus doing no bump. So I know some people argue about the economics of doing the bump feeding. So you have to consider that there's a cost to do it. And we need more research. So I'll come back on that in a few minutes. Precision feeding and gestation. We feed one feed most of the time. I talk about that. But we have option today to do some blend feeding or phase feeding, I will call. What we know, based on some data that may not be recent enough to make sure that they are the good data, but we still have data that showed that the amino acid requirement of the cell changed during gestation. Early mid-gestation versus late gestation, there's a change in amino acid requirement. Today, we know that we could feed a lower lysine diet for the first 40 days. You know, we feed a 0.54, 0.56 digestible lysine diet. But if you look at the need of the cell for the first 5 to 6 weeks, we could feed a 0.35 to 0.4% lysine diet. But maybe at the end, that low lysine diet won't be enough. So with one single diet, we have to overfeed to make sure that we don't compromise the cell toward the end of gestation. And again, like I said,
requirement in amino acids seems to increase at the end of gestation, and there could be a parity effect. The gill, because they are still a growing animal, may need more amino acids because they still have some lean deposition happening throughout their first gestation. And what will happen as well, as we move to group housing, that's going to give us a bit more flexibility to apply different feed program at gestation. For example, we can have one feed for the sow in crate for the first 35 days after breeding. And when they go in pen, you just put two feed line, and then you can have two diet that could be fed for that 35, 40 days up to breeding. So again, we don't have all the data to define or make the best program out of that, but there's an option that could be applied with the new housing system. Just want to say a bit about the amino acid requirement. So pretty clear that even though the data are a bit old in some case, if you look at all the data, there's an increase of lysine requirement on a daily basis at the end of gestation. That increase will go by to 1.3 to 2.2 times more than early gestation. So it's pretty clear that the sow need more lysine. So that's why we are feeding a higher lysine diet to make sure that at the end of gestation, we have enough lysine. Do we have
enough with the diet that we feed today? That's a good question. But we are likely overfeeding the early mid-gestation part with the diet that we have today.
There's a trial that was done about 3 years ago. I was involved in the committee to set up the trial. It was done in a research farm in Quebec under the surveillance of CDPQ, which is the Standard Development Bar, where we show that by feeding, blend feeding, so feeding the sow in gestation based on their requirement, based on the INRA French model, we were able on P1 to increase the birth weight and increase the livability of the pigs by about 3%. So we reduced the pre-weaning mortality by about 3% through increasing birth weight and better quality of the pigs only on gilt. So this is 20% of the herd. So the trial that we have didn't show any benefit on older sow, but on gilt, there seems to be something happening. But the trial was done on the mature herd, so we only had 20% of the sow that were gilt. So we didn't have enough gilt to do a lot of stat analysis and also to do some carryover effect on the next cycle. But with the blend feeding system, we're able to save about $3 per sow per year on feed and gestation. And if you just look at the impact on the gill to increase or reduce pre-weaning on 20% of the herd, that's about $9 to $10 per sow per year. Again, we have to confirm those numbers with larger amount of gills in a further trial. But the potential is about $12, $13 per sow per year to combine the blend feeding saving on feed costs and the impact on gill. There's a new project that will be done again with the CDPQ because they are building a new sow barn that will start in December 2021. It's a 650 sow research barn. And we're going to use the gilt because it's a startup. We only going to have gilt to start the barn. We're going to add four batch of 125 gilt that will be used to do again that blend feeding trial. So we'll have a single diet at 0.54, 0.55 digestible lysine. We'll have the single diet with the bump feeding. So we'll validate a bit the bump feeding concept that I've talked about, and precision feeding, where we're going to feed the sow based on daily requirement, based on the INRA model, French model. And because we'll have a lot of gilt, we'll have better chance to detect any significant difference on performance difference. And the nice thing about that trial is that we're going to follow up the performance of the progeny of those gilt in nursery and in finisher. There's some data that show that by better feeding the gilt, you may increase the number of muscle fiber, and that can lead to better performance of the progeny after weaning in nursery and in finisher. Pretty interesting trial that will take time because we'll do it on three cycle to follow up the carryover effect of the better feeding on multiple parity. So, but that's the way to do it to have a clear answer about the concept. And moving to what I call the peripartum pre-farrow transition phase. Again, some challenge there. We feed sow in group housing or in crate, you know, with a low energy, low amino acid, lower calcium, higher fiber diet. Then we move those out to farrowing, and we want them, after farrowing, to have access to high energy, higher amino acid, higher calcium, lower fiber, more starch. This is the general concept of the farrowing and gestation diet. So what happened in between? When you get those sow close to farrowing, should we give them the gestation feed, or should be giving them the lactation diet? Honestly, most of the people, because they get into the farrowing crate and the access to the lactation feed is easiest, will feed those sow with lactation feed. Some people will keep feeding the gestation diet. Today, I don't have the answer of what is the best strategy, because we have people that do both and have good success. but I think we can do better. But again, we need more data to support that.
Fiber before farming. So why it's important to have, I would say, fiber or a better cell status before farming? One of the impact is constipation. We know that constipation can lead to increased farming length. There's data that are coming from Europe that show that if you have softer feces, so less constipation, your duration of farming will be less. Again, the R square value in that data is not very huge because it's still a high variable measurement to measure farming length. But overall, if you look at the trend, we understand that the cell that had no constipation or less constipation will have a shorter duration of farming, which can lead to less stillborn and better start in milk production after. So when we talk about fiber, again, I'm not meaning that you need to take the shit in your hand and look at it that way, but what you want to avoid those hard ball on sow pre-farrow. This is a picture from Europe, so they are on straw. Same concept for our sow in the farming crate in North America. We want to avoid those hard ball before farming. We want to have a nice soft manure. So the fiber level, the feed level, and all those things will matter to get that no constipation on sow pre-farrow. And the other thing that is important is the sow status in terms of energy. So when we talk about pre-farrow diet, fiber, energy, what does it mean? There's some data, again, from Europe that show that the time from the last meal versus the onset of farrowing will have an impact on farrowing process. So the first graph at your left show the probability of farrowing assistance as you increase the time from the last meal to farrowing. So as soon as you go in that 3, 6, or 6 hour more delay from the last meal to farrowing, you're going to increase the assistance, so which means the sow will have harder time to farrow. On the right one, it's the same thing with the probability of stillborn. Again, 3 to 6 hour doesn't seem to have a big impact, but when you go to 6 hour and more, you have more stillborn or risk of stillbirth if you have longer delay from farrowing to the last feeding. And because what does it mean is that you need energy for the sow to farrow. So if you have too long time before she farrow versus the last meal, she's going to be in shortage of energy and the farrowing process will be compromised. How do we provide energy to those cells? So people will say, oh, we'll give them fat, starch, lactation diet. But what we have to understand when we use those diets with high starch, we have energy uptake that have a peak, but will drop after. So this is the top one where you feed a lactation diet, where their energy will go up and then it's going to go down. If you feed fiber, the energy content will be more even. So you won't have that peak, but you have a longer time where the energy status of the sow will be maintained. And when she's going to farrow, that's going to help her to maintain the farrowing process better. So by doing that or by saying that, we should say that the gestation diet is better than lactation diet. But again, people are using lactation diet with good success at times. But keep in mind that fiber could be important pre-farrow to improve the farrowing process. The other concept that we may think about when we talk about the pre-farrowing period is the electrolytical balance. So playing with the mineral status of the cell. So when we talk about the DCAB or balance of calcium and iron, there's different terms to talk about it. We talk about the sodium and chloride, which we call calcium, and sodium and potassium. And we talk about chlorine and sulfur as anion. And what we want to have pre-farrow is to have a higher level of anion versus calcium. So the pH internally will reduce. The cell will mobilize calcium to buffer that pH, and that calcium will become more available for the cell farrowing process. When cell farrow, they need calcium for contractation of the smooth muscle, and also that calcium is really important for milk and start in milk production. That concept is used widely in dairy cow. And why should we not think the same with our sow, which produce on a weight basis as much milk as a dairy cow? So looking at that concept should make sense. Again, we need more data to support that concept. And again, the type of fiber you're going to use is important. Is there other feed additive that we should use pre-farrow to help, you know, to achieve a better performance around farrowing? How long should we apply that concept of the balance of calcium and iron? Is it 5 days? Is it 10 days pre-farrow? We have to do it continuously. We cannot do it one day out of two. You know, we have to do it on a 5, 6, 7 day period on a constant basis. And how do we apply that on the farm? So we did some work in the past year with trying to develop a top dress, because there's not a lot of people that have access to a different diet for the salt-free farrow. So what we do, you know, either people are using gestation or lactation diet, but we try to come with a top dress that will bring that concept of the calcium anion balance with other feed additives. So the first trial we did, looking at 400 sows, so good size trial that we do in our research farm at High Life, out west in Manitoba, litter size at 15.3, 15.4, no difference, but the stillborn were reduced by about 0.29 pigs per sow with using the top dress. And we gave that top dress for 4.8 days on average. Some sow got it for 6 days, some for 3 days, because sow entered the farrowing room at different time versus farrowing, and we only gave it when the sow were in farrowing. So first trial showed pretty good result, high significant value difference for the top dress group. We redid the trial again with another group of sow a bit later on, close to 500 sow per group. The litter size on the top dress group was lower and doesn't have to do with the top dress. It's just by chance, you know, even though the p-value was significant. So when you look at the stillborn again, we were able to reduce by 0.27 on the top dress group. But when you take total born as a covariate in the stat analysis, because there was a difference in total born, we have to take out that bias. There's a 0.2 difference in stillborn. So 0.29 in our first trial, 0.20 in our second trial, 0.25 average, if you want to call an average for both trials. And again, we gave in that case 3.5 days on average the top dress. Our top dress was given for 4 or 5 days on average, like I said, 80 grams per day. The average was 0.2 to 0.3 stillborn reduced by litter. If you look at the impact on performance over the years, thinking about 15% pre-weaning mortality, that's a 0.4 to 0.6 extra pigs weaned per sow per year. At a value of $35 per pigs, that's $15 to $20 per sow per year. And the cost of the top dress is around $2 to $250 per sow per year. So the ROI is about 8 to 1 using that concept. So again, no spectacular result, but a bit of extra in terms of your performance or being able to reduce the stillborn by using that concept. So we are doing other trials to try to better understand how it's working. We're going to do some blood sample to understand the pH, calcium, metabolism pre-farrow and after farrowing. So we want to understand a bit better what we do, okay, because it's good to have better performance, but it's good to understand why it's happening and can we improve again those performance, and can we implement that to a pre-farrow diet? We can use a top dress or we can set up a pre-farrow diet pre-farrow. Now we jump in lactation. So in lactation, I'm going to focus a lot on lysine protein requirement, because that's a big part of the lactation diet. What we know is that the requirement of the sow are not always well-defined. There's a lot of difference between North American and European value. And I'm not saying that to say it's U.S., Canada versus Europe, but the reality is that when you look at lactation diet in Europe, they are often lower in lysine and protein than what we do in North America. I think we need more good research. There's good research that have been done, and there's more and more being done, but we need to do it and understand more the impact of different level of lysine or protein in our diet. And again, because there's a large variation in intake and performance, it means that the requirement for Masard is very variable. You know, an average is an average, but from the average, you have a lot of variation. The guild versus the older sow, just because of feed intake, the requirement on dietary lysine and the diet to match what they need on a daily basis is different. And as we often feed just one single diet in lactation, we tend to over-formulate that lactation diet to make sure we cover the needs of everybody. But still, we are probably over-formulating most of the time versus what we should do. So some difference in requirements. So I'm using iron or Kensal State or some of the U.S. Model to determine lysine requirement versus the Anglo French model. But if I will look at what they do in the Netherlands, it's about the same as what the French people are doing. In maintenance, the sow either use the USA or European model, not a big difference, 1.8 to 1.6 gram per day. So the sow requirement for lysine based on what she has in the diet is very minimal for maintenance. What drives the lysine requirement is the growth of the litter, because she needs to produce milk and she needs protein and amino acids to support that milk production. So if you look at the US iron requirement, 22 grams of SID lysine per kg of litter growth. If you look at the French one, we talk about 16 to 17. So 28% less lysine requirement, you know. And you have to realize that the French guys are not poor producers. Right? There's a lot of farm in Europe that produce a lot of pigs, even more than us. So those requirements are based on good performing animal as well. So just give you an example side by side. If you look at the cell at 275 kg, you know, look at the red number. The Ahern model will say that we need 65 grams of lysine per day for that cell at 2.75 kg of growth per day for the old litter. And the French data will say 47. Okay, that's a huge difference. And when you bring that back to lysine in the diet, we're talking about 1.08% lysine for the US model, 0.78% lysine for lactation diet based on the French data. We never formulate diet at 0.78% lysine. You know, we are more in that 1 to 1.1% lysine in North America. And we're talking just on the cost per ton of feed, that's $35 to $40 per ton, just on the cost of the diet based on lysine difference. So huge difference. So lysine requirement in lactation, you know, again, the other thing that drives that is not the weight of the sow, it's the litter growth. Okay, or the feed intake of the cell. So if you change your feed intake by half a kg per day, that's going to change your diet lysine needed by 8%. So you're going to need more lysine in your diet to match the same daily lysine if you change the feed intake by half a kg per day. The GL versus P2, that's a 10 to 15% difference in lysine requirement for the feed because of the lower feed intake on GL. And if you talk about weight gain, if you increase your weaning weight by 0.5 kg, you should add 8% more lysine in your diet. So all those numbers make sense, but how much lysine do we need? So which model to use? Should we formulate this with one single diet for the average of the herd or to meet the top 25% requirement or 100% of the cell requirement? Should we use two diets if we can, you know, one diet for the P2, one diet for the GIL? What about the top dress for the cell that eat less, you know, is it needed? And what about blend feeding? You know, the blend feeding is something that we can apply today with some of the feed system that we can access on farm. And you can have a blend feeding system where you're going to match a high and low lysine diet. And on a daily basis, you'd adjust the amount of lysine or amount of each of the diet to match the cell by cell requirement. And those requirements of the cell will be based on their feed intake and the growth of the pigs and the stage in lactation where the cell is at. So in terms of piglet averagely gain, we did some measurement on the daily basis and on some litter to understand the curve of growth of pigs in lactation. And we realized that the first 2 days, they are about 100 grams per day. Then there's another plateau of 150 to 200 grams per day for 2-3 days. And after 6 days, you know, it's pretty much of a plateau again, between 250 and 300 grams of growth per day. Because people won't weigh pigs on a daily basis in their farm to estimate how much litter growth, we can use those curves to estimate the growth requirement of the sow. Based on number of pigs she nursed and based on those growth curves that we have from our research farm. And again, there's data or system today that can be used that can do the blend feeding, you know, because you cannot do it by hand, mixing two diet, you know, guessing 35%, 65%, you know, it has to be done with a computerized automated system. There's a cost to it, but that's the way to do it if you want to go down that road, okay? So we did a trial. First trial we did was 2-3 years ago in our research farm at High Life. We have the blend feeding system in all the farrowing crates, so 220 farrowing crates in the farm, and we did three treatment groups. So we did one single diet at 0.95, which is what we call probably a low lysine diet based on the standard that we have today. We did a high lactation diet at 114, and we did a group with blend feeding. So the blend feeding was based on Ahern requirements, so the high requirement that I've shown you about, those are the requirements that we use at that time, and we had a high lysine, a low lysine. And on a daily basis, we're blending the right amount of each diet to meet the cell requirement based on the model that we have from the Ahern US model. Look at the performance. True protein first. The low lysine diet was at 18.5%, and the high lysine diet was at 26% lysine because we fed a lot of sow at the 1.2, 1.3% lysine. So a lot of protein in that diet. But if you look at the data and the performance, there's almost no difference in, like, there's no difference in weaning weight, pre-weaning mortality, and number of pigs weaned. Where we see some difference is in feed intake. You know, when we go to the high lysine or the bland diet, where we fed a high lysine because the requirements were high, we had a drop in feed intake of about 200 grams per day. okay? Not major, but that's about 0.5 pound per day on feed intake. If you look at the lysine intake, for sure, on the blend feeding, even though they eat a bit less, because we have higher lysine based on the requirement of the model, we fed 72 grams of lysine per day. On the low lysine, we fed 66, and we had no difference in performance. So the point here is that between 56 and 72, 73, there's no difference in performance. And if you look at the requirement that were calculated, we, based on iron requirement, we should have been at 68 to meet the requirement of the cell. So at 56, we were 12 grams below, and we still maintain performance. So what does it tell me is that we overfed those cell in lysine. You know, back fat loss was no different, weight loss was no different. The next litter size was the same, and the wind submersion level was the same. So with that, we understand, or we thought, hey, we fed way too much lysine in the blend feeding and at the 114 because the 0.95 gives us as good result. So that's a bit what I said in terms of summary. And we use those data just to show how much lysine we should use to optimize next litter size. So when we look at the gram of lysine per day, you know, that's what you have at the bottom, 36 to, you know, 80, 85 grams per day or more. You know, you reach a point at 56 where you seem to optimize the next litter size. You know, there's some up and down for sure. But if you look at the trend, at 56 gram plus of lysine intake per day, you optimize the next litter size. Below that, you compromise. So that's a diet at 0.70 to 0.9% digestible lysine. But as soon as you get that 0.9 with a good feed intake, you should be able to get that 56 to 6 gram of lysine per day and then optimize next litter size. We did the same, we took the same look with the pig's wean, okay? And pretty much the same, eh? You can see that at 51, 56, that's where we optimize the weaning weight. Before that, we seem to have a trend to have lower weight. So, and it's exactly the same type of diet that we should feed to make that 51 to 60 gram of lysine, the 0.9 to 1.1% digestible lysine diet versus 0.8, 0.9, or 0.7%. So that's already a good starting point to understand that we don't need to give those cells 68, 70 grams of lysine per day. The 50, 55 seems to be adequate for now. So what we did, because, you know, we were not happy about our first trial, we did a second trial that we just finished. Well, it's not even finished. You know, we still have cell in farrowing that we need to gather data, but I'll give you the data on 200 cell per group, which is pretty good already. And we use the ENRA model. So we use the more severe model to estimate the requirement of the cell. So we had in that trial two groups, one diet at 1% lysine, and we use the high and low lysine from the blend feeding to mix at 55 and 45% to always have 1% lysine. And the blend feeding, we had that 1.3, 0.65% diet. And on a daily basis, based on sow intake, growth of the pigs, requirement, we were feeding the best mix to match the requirement of the sow. Okay. So the high lysine was at 22% protein and the low lysine was at 40%. And there was also some adjustment on calcium phosphate level based on the ENRA model. So look at the data. Again, if you look at wean pigs, pre-weaning mortality, there was no difference. Even if you have a numerical advantage on wean and pre-weaning for the blend feeding, it was not highly significant. If you look at weaning weight, there's a bit of a drop, you know, so the blend feeding was at 6.3. Highly significant. The average in the gain of the piglet, 227 versus 236, highly significant. But when I look at litter weight, when I took into account the number of pigs weaned or number of pigs that the sow have nursed, the litter weight adjusted at 21 days, so everything is equal, was not different. So we were able in total to wean as many weight, even though on a per pig basis, it was a bit less on the blend feeding because there was 0.2 pigs more weaned, you know. So overall, the sow was able to support milk production to wean the same total amount of weight from the pigs. If you look at back fat loss, it was the same. The weight loss, though, we lost about 6 kg more on the sow on the blend feeding, so the low lysine level. The feed intake was close to be higher because we had less protein in the blend feeding. Okay, we fed overall lower lysine level, lower protein levels, so we're able to improve a bit the lysine intake, the feed intake. If you look at the lysine intake, our 1%, whereas 62, 63 gram of lysine per day. So remember, we're talking about 50, 56, 55. So we were still probably overfeeding a bit on average. The blend feeding, we were down at 49, okay? And the requirement that was calculated based on the ENRA model was at 47 for both groups. So we overfed by about, you know, 15 grams, the 1% digestible lysine group. and we overfed by about 2 grams or 1.2 grams, very small. And we were really close to requirement. That's what the goal of the blend feeding, that was the goal. So we fed much less lysine, you know, on a daily basis. And we were able to maintain performance, even though we lost a bit more weight. Okay, so that's something to keep in mind. We still have 60 to 70 sows that are in farming right now that we have to complete the data. So we'll get more data, so we'll be able to have even a better sample size. We'll also monitor the next litter to make sure that the weight loss, what is the impact on wing to service interval and next litter. If we see a drop there, that's going to tell us a bit the risk of having that low lysine level. But at first, you know, performance were still not too bad with that very low lysine level, okay? But again, we'll wait for the end of the data. Based on the Indra model, our control group at 1% lysine, only 5% of the sow were underfed, okay? For sure, we fed 1% lysine and the requirement were around 47. So that's normal. On the blend feeding group, we had about 25% of the sow that were under requirement, but it was from 1 or 2 grams per day. So very, very minimal deviation because we were adjusting the feed blend every day based on the feed intake. So we should not be far, you know, far off. So yes, they were a bit under, but by very minimal level. So just to tell you that the 1% diet that we use in the control group, you know, and if you look at the blend feeding average that we fed, it would be a diet at 0.77, okay? So that's much lower, okay? 0.77 will provide that 49 grams of lysine that we had in the blend feeding group. That's a cost difference of $30, $35 per ton, okay? So on an annual sow feed intake of 250 kg per year, that's about $11 to $12 per sow per year. But does it pay for a blend feeding system? That's the big question. So just doing a bit of a summary of the requirement of the sow lactation, I used the INRA model and I put a 10% factor for safety, because I think to be on the INRA model straight, it's really low first. So I don't want to go there first, and I don't want to go there at the 1.1% factor that I'm using right now. But just to give you some example, if you have a gill, which is a 5.75 kg per day intake average, and you have a litter growth of 2.5 to 2.75, you can feed a 0.82 to 0.9% digestible lysine diet for your gill. If you go to the older sow that eat more, you can drop at 0.8, 0.72. So remember that the trial we did on blend feeding, we were at 0.77 for all the sow, gill and P2 include. So we were in that range that we have here. So, but on the single diet, that may be too low, but that's much, much lower than the 1 to 1.1% that we still see today in lactation. The Dutch, they think about the same. They think like the French. They say that we need about 40 grams of lysine per day, which is about 0.7% digestible lysine. They still recognize that you should not formulate diet at that level when you have one single diet. So they say 0.8 to 0.85% SID lysine, and that's what they use in Europe. We see a lot of that type of lysine level in France, in Netherlands, in Denmark, and they have good performance. Eh? So they wean a bit older, so that's probably one thing that we have to be aware of, but they feed much lower level of lysine for sure. And what they say, the Dutch, is that if you go to that low level of lysine, you still may have a bit more body weight loss. And they say that you just need to add some synthetic lysine on top of your diet without adjusting for the other amino acid, and you can recuperate that weight loss. So we're going to do a trial. So we have a trial starting next week or the week after, where we're going to test that concept of the 1% lysine diet, which is our reference today, always our control group. We're going to go to 0.85, so much lower on one single diet, so no blend feeding, 0.85 to all the sow. And we'll do a 0.95. So this is going to be the 0.85 plus 1.25 kg of synthetic lysine on top of it. No adjustment on other amino acid, just to see if we ever lose performance with the 0.85. Is that strategy to increase just the lysine level can get back on track in terms of performance. Feed intake and lactation, we talk about that. We need to optimize feed intake. So beyond the nutrition or the feed that we provide to the sow, feed management is important. I can give you the best sow diet with the best lysine level, the best feed additive, but if the sow don't eat that diet, it's an issue. So feed intake is key. So the body condition, the feeder type, the way you feed yourself, it's really important, okay? And especially in early lactation, you know, people sometimes are a bit too shy to crank the feed for sow in early lactation. So some data from Ferguson, which is the AgriSearch, Nutrico Research Barn, you know, they did a meta-analysis. The graph is in French, but it's not very complicated. This is the feed intake at the bottom and the average gain of the pigs. So as the sow eat more, the pigs grow more. Pretty simple, but, you know, that's key to have good feed intake on sow lactation. The other thing that we know that if we minimize body weight loss or back fat loss of the sow, we can optimize performance. That graph is from our research farm where we look at back fat loss on gelt in their first lactation. So the first lactation, back fat loss, and the next litter size. And you can see that when you lost that 1 to 2 mils of back fat, that's where you optimize your next litter size. If you go too high in back fat loss, that 4, 5, 6 mil, you drop your litter size on the next litter. And this is on lifetime performance. So the back fat loss and the first lactation will drive the lifetime performance of that cell. And again, the 1 to 3 millimeters of back fat seems to optimize lifetime performance. If you go to that 4, 5, 6 mils of back fat and that loss in that first lactation, you're going to compromise overall performance of your cell. It's well recognized that feathered sow eat less. So yeah, we know that it's important to adjust feeding and gestation to maintain body condition, not get sow overfat. Calibrate your feed drops. If you have feed drops with new corn, new wheat, new barley, do some checks once in a while. People like to have nice looking sow, but nice looking sow doesn't mean they have to be too fat. So that is important. And be careful with your gelt. If you breed a gelt at 270 days of age, you know, and 160 kg, that's a bad start. You know, you need to be a bit more younger and lighter on those gelt. Preferred back fat versus intake, nothing new for you. This is data from our research farm. As fat get higher on sow preferral, they eat less. A set of data from PAC on multiple, on all the parity. You can see the trend as the back fat increase at the bottom, the feed intake is going down as well. Nice data from US as well that showed that sow that were fed 6 pounds in gestation, which were likely overfed, so those sow, I guess, get fat. So they adjust the feed program to drop to 5 pounds. It would look what happened to lactation feed. They were around that 5 pounds, 2.1 kg per day, and they went up. Okay, so just by the fact that they adjust the feed program gestation to get the sow a bit leaner, they were able to improve feed intake in lactation. And again, gelt eat less in lactation than P2. The gelts are the blue one, and you can see at the start, there's not a big difference, but when you go to that 7-10 days period, you can be as much as 1 or 2 kg per day lower intake on gelt. So you have to keep that in mind. So if you get gelt too fat, too big, that's just going to be worse. Protein, I'm going to talk quickly about that. When we raise lysine, we raise protein. We use synthetic amino acids to balance the diet, but by default, if you feed more lysine, you're going to have more protein in the diet. And that leads to sometimes some issue with feed intake. The reason why is that sow need to spend energy to digest protein. So if you feed a lot of protein to a sow, she spends energy to digest protein, and we call the process metabolic eat increment. So just think of yourself, if you go to bed at 10 o'clock and you just ate a big steak at 8, 9 o'clock, you're going to go to bed and you feel hot. You know, you want to digest that protein. So your body will spend energy and produce heat to digest that protein. And when it's winter time, when it's cool, it's not that big of a deal to feel a bit of heat. But when it's 35 outside or 35 in the barn, that's not good. So those issues become more severe when we talk about heat stress or summertime production. Okay. So we did a trial where we fed different levels of lysine and protein. So 1.1% lysine or 0.9. So the 1.1 was at 20% protein. The other two are at 18, 15. And you can see that to get to the high protein, we were having 22% DDG in our A and B diet. And the C diet was no DDG. So same level of lysine, but about 2.5-3% less protein because we had no DDG in the diet. Performance. No difference in performance. Weaning weight was the same. But when we look at feed intake, though, you know, the sow that had high DDG, okay, A and B, had lower feed intake. And it was a bit of a surprise to see at first that the 18 was lower than the 21, so B was lower than A. Well, I'll come back on that. But the C group, you know, with the low protein, no DDG, had better feed intake. And again, the weaning weight was not better, but sometimes the feed intake doesn't translate to better weaning weight. It translates to less body condition loss. So if you look at the data, we lost less back fat on the sow that ate more, group C, and there was a trend for lower weight loss as well. At the bottom, I put something that it's a bit more nutritional, but it's the leucine to lysine ratio. Leucine is an amino acid that we don't really look at sometimes when we formulate diet. It's called a non-essential amino acid. But if you look at the leucine to lysine ratio, that has an impact on feed intake. So it's not just about protein. So you look at treatment B, the leucine to lysine ratio was at 1.72 because we had low protein and high DDG, and DDG has a high leucine to lysine ratio. So by feeding high DDG and a bit lower protein diet, we increase the ratio, which seems to drive feed intake down. The group with the best feed intake, group C, had the lower leucine to lysine ratio. So the saving to go to 1.1 to 0.9% is about $23 per ton. So again, no difference in performance unless you have an issue with protein level and feed intake. And the reason why leucine to lysine ratio seems to matter for feed intake is that when you have high level of leucine, you increase the signal for an enzyme that is used for protein synthesis. It's called a mTOR signaling. And when you have more of that secreting in the system, that sends a message to the animal that I don't want to eat more. I have enough nutrient. I'm full. I don't want to eat more. So that's a side effect of the high leucine level. So can we confirm the impact of the high leucine to lysine ratio on feed intake? So we did another trial because sometimes we like to repeat the trial to make sure that we have the right data. In that trial, there were some people suggesting that if you have high leucine level, you can up the valine, which is another amino acid, and get no negative impact of the high leucine if you do that. So we did a trial with same level of lysine, 0.98% at that time. The protein level in the first two groups was exactly the same, the leucine to lysine ratio at 1.67, but in group B, we had a bit more valine. So the valine to lysine ratio was a bit higher. Group C, we just dropped the leucine to lysine ratio at 1.4, which means that we gave less DDG. So some people will say the problem is not the leucine, it's DDG, but I don't think DDG is the problem. It's more the leucine in the DDG that bring the problem on feed intake when you look at it. So 167, 1.4 with different valine level. If you look at the performance, again, no difference in performance. Understand that they were all fed the same lysine level at the end of the day. The feed intake, again, was much better when we fed the 1.4 leucine to lysine ratio, lower protein, but also lower leucine to lysine ratio. The feed intake was much better. And treatment B, where we had more valine, we even had a bit lower intake. I don't get that one, but for sure, to increase the valine level in treatment B didn't help for feed intake. If you look at the back fat loss, group C was lower. So again, it was not shown by better weaning weight, the better intake in that case, but by lower back fat loss and a trend for lower weight loss as well. And if you look at the lysine intake, we were in that 59, 57, 64 gram of lysine per day. So plenty of lysine. So that's why the weaning weight was not impacted by that trial. Last part of my presentation, feed additive in lactation diet. I just want to touch on that. Chromium is a widely used product in North America. I'm estimating 50 to 70% of their sour are using chromium in their sow feed. 200 ppb is the dose that we use, that people are using. In Canada, it's about $260 per ton for gestation and lactation because we use it in both. Potential improvement for litter size, reduced pre-weaning, better birth weight. So chromium will drive the energy intake, you know, optimize energy intake by the animal. But there's a lot of variable data. Some trials show some positive results on litter size, some on pre-weaning. So it's not clear what it does exactly, but because of the cost of it, most of the people use it. Organic trismetol, I believe in those products because not just for performance or not mainly for performance, but mainly for longevity of the animal. We talk about the importance of having lifetime productivity. I think the blend of organic mineral like manganese, zinc, and copper that you feed in lactation, gestation, and also in your gill development diet is driving the longevity of the animal by better leg and feed quality. Last one that I want to talk about, a new product or new concept that we see more and more over the last couple of years is polyphenol in feed. Polyphenol are extract of great herb tea. They can come from different type of herb based product or fruit product. These are they are concentrated from the extract, you know, from that product itself. There's different product in the market. I'm not going to talk about all the product. We did a trial with the grape extract called Phytogiovitis. We fed 150 ppm in lactation only. So the sow received about 4 or 5 days of it before the farrow and until all lactation. The cost is about $10 to $11 per ton of feed just for the lactation. But we saw a significant increase in weaning weight, 350 grams per pig. It was highly significant. The trial was done on 150 sow per group, so very good trial. We measured the Briggs value of colostrum, which indicate a higher IgG content, so more immunoglobulin, because we have higher Bricks value on the cell that received the polyphenol product. We have some colostrum sample and blood sample getting tested at the lab right now. We should have got their data a long time ago, but because of COVID, the lab was closed for a while, so we're waiting for the final data. The cost per cell per year is about $384 per cell per year, but the improvement in winning weight can lead to about $12 to $18 per cell per year, so a payback of 3.5 to 1. So there's different ways to calculate the economics. That's my, that's mine. So there's a payback to use that product in lactation. Last one, I want to talk about photo period in lactation. That's not related to feed, but I thought it was interesting. Pretty simple project that we did, comparing lightening of 8 versus 16 hours in lactation. The 16 hours show an improvement in weaning weight by 260 grams per pig. Again, highly significant, huge amount of sound in that child. The only thing that we saw that is a bit of a question mark is that the first 2 days we measure pigs dead, the first 2 days after farrowing, we had a bit more pigs dead in the 16-hour group. We think, or we thought, that it was because of higher activity of the sow. If you have more lightening, they stand up more crushing. Again, I'm not sure about that, but that's our appetizers for now. But we still have better weight at the end. And overall, the pre-weaning was not higher. So we lost a bit more pigs at the start, but at the end, total, there was no difference. So we have another trial going right now in another research farm that we have in Manitoba as well, just to validate that concept, which is pretty easy to apply if we have to do it. So conclusion, current feed program and knowledge for sow get us to have good performance. So I'm not saying that we're bad. You know, I think we do a pretty good job both on the nutrition and farm side to manage those sow and get those high productivity. But I think we can do better, or we can save costs by doing it. So we have to think about way of keep improving, getting our life easier to manage those sow, and also reducing our costs, which is important. So amino acid requirement and energy, I didn't talk too much about energy. That's another subject, but I think we need to have better definition of those requirements. The feed, the fiber is important. So I believe into fiber and sow. Again, access to fiber may be limiting in some area, and a different type of fiber may not be available for everybody. So you have to keep that in mind. And the feed additive that we talk about in sow have some application. But we do a lot of trial with feed additive, and most of the time the success is really low. I'm just showing the one that I think should be used, but there's a pile of those that we have tried over the times that didn't show any benefit when we did the trial. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay, we've got time for just a couple questions. If anyone's got one, just raise your hand and I'll unmute you. I don't see any in the Q&A. One comment or question I had, I'm sure everybody's ears perked up when you said it's possible to feed a cheaper diet with less lysine and possibly get the same performance. I just wondered if you had a hypothesis of why the research done in Europe might be different from what Dr. Ahern did, or what, you know, and why it might be different from what you're doing today. What would it change? Is it genetics or some other factor?
That's a good point, because if you look at the by principle, you will think that the cell today that are leaner, wean more pigs, may need more lysine than 20 years ago when Ahern did his research. And I then went back to how it was done, you know, at that time. So was it measured on performance of the cell, on some of the nitrogen, you know, some of the stuff more that happened in terms of the metabolism of the cell that we think is better for performance, but doesn't show when you look at the cell performance.
The host would like to unmute your microphone.
I think today, you can press star six to unmute. The last 5-10 years in Europe, and I said that Europe had good performance, so I think we have to trust those data. And I think sometimes, you know, we look at the performance of the sow on 1 liter, and we don't look at longevity and the impact over time. And in Europe, they have more restriction on protein and things like that, so they were forced to go down in protein and lysine. And I guess they found that it was working. So I don't know exactly why today we can say that the data that we have show that we need less than 20 years ago, but that's the way it is. And I guess when we did it 15, 20 years ago, we were not doing it the right way.
Okay. Seeing no more questions or hands raised, I guess I would like to thank you for that presentation, very detailed and excellent.
Okay, thanks a lot.